Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Ken Johnston. He wants to go to Mars. And you'll be next with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Ken Johnston with us. And of course, we're going to take your phone calls as we talk about his planned trip to the Mars. These people will come from all over the planet, Ken, different countries?
That's correct. It is a worldwide program. Excuse me.
Will you be paid anything while you're out there?
Excuse me?
You going to be paid anything?
Well, interesting enough, once we get through the end of the fourth phase, which is the final selection part, then those that have been selected will become employees of Mars One, and they'll be paid during the time of training all the way up through even the launch all the way to Mars. And while we're building the colony, we'll continue to be employees of the Mars One corporation.
All right, let's go to some calls. West Hartford, Connecticut, we've got Bill with us. Bill, go ahead.
Yes, hi, George. Hi, and as you know, I'm an amateur astronomer. Ken, I have two great questions for you. I understand space and astronomy to a T. The first one's on Inspiration Mars, Dennis Tito's mission, which I know you know about. The second one is comparing your 2018 rover with ExoMars, Europe's rover in 2016, and especially the rover in 2018 and America's Curiosity 2.0 rover in 2020. Question number one, how will Dennis Tito's Inspiration Mars mission, which is going to launch a man and a woman on a flyby, a real long flyby of Mars in a year and a half, returning back to the Earth in late 2019, affect you? And will that get off the ground? Do you think ExoMars will, do you think Inspiration Mars will launch in January 3rd, 2018 as scheduled? And question number two on the unmanned missions, how will your 2018 rover complement not only Europe's lander in 2018, I meant to say the lander entry and descent and landing mission, but Europe's 2018 rover that will look for past as well as present microbial life, and America's 2020 Curiosity 2.0 rover that will look for past life on Mars?
Wow, some very powerful questions, and you probably have a lot more data than I do because I haven't kept up with it that much. But as far as the flyby, I was reading something in the last couple of days that said that is already decided it's going to be canceled and dropped out, that they're not going to be allowed to do it or not going to do it. And as far as the rovers working together, I'm not up on any of that. I'm sorry, but I'm more focused on what the Mars One program is going to do and their rover they're going to send up on 2018.
How disappointing is it right now, Ken, with regards to what NASA's doing in space?
Well, I mean, let's face it, we went to the moon, we were way ahead of the curve in science, and then everything, the rug got pulled out from under us. When I was there at Johnson Space Center, and I was getting all set up to be on the Skylab portion of it, and on the while I was on vacation for 4 days, I came back, found out my job had been canceled, and shortly after that, Grumman laid off over 36,000 employees that were working on the Apollo program. The thing is that some of your top scientists, we had to get together and figure out ways to get us to the moon and back, and then the government canceled and pulled the money out. And there were PhD scientists out selling newspapers in Houston during that time. So it's pretty tough.
So it's not easy. Let's go to Steve in Attleboro, Massachusetts, east of the Rockies. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you very much for taking my call. Longtime listener, and this is a really great topic of conversation tonight, one of many. But the question is, Ken raises a very good point, but the sad reality is Ken, like many of us, like Ken, myself included, are dreamers, because unfortunately trips to Mars, bases on Mars, colonies on Mars, the moon, whatever, could have been made a reality a long time ago. But unfortunately, the way that corporate greed and corporations are today, realistically, unless there's something that can be economically extracted or gained by it, people are more focused on attaining power, wealth, and riches as a goal unto itself, as opposed to putting money and certain things into exploration and scientific exploration and betterment of our species. And that's a sad thing. And realistically, we probably could have had a base on the moon a long time ago for whatever reason, or even on Mars. But because it costs so much and people are more focused on attaining wealth and power here. I just wonder, is it going to happen? Is it going to become a reality? And thank you for taking my call.
Okay, Steve, thank you. What do you think, Ken?
Well, I think it definitely is going to become a reality, and it'll become a reality because we can show ways that it can become profitable to those that want to invest in it, those that want to get the advertisement. And the approach that they're taking in their finance plan in order to make it advertising to corporations and things, I think you and the people's interest, kind of like the Survivor program, you're going to have a reality program watching your favorite Mars One astronaut as we go through simulated Mars habitats in our training. And by the time we get ready to launch, everybody's going to be, your favorite team, almost like your favorite football team. So you have to make it into a reality that the population is going to relate to, and that is what these folks are basing their funding program on. I think it's going to work.
How rigorous is the training, Kevin?
Just a little bit that I've been able to read, it's going to be pretty darn tough. It's supposed to, at least 2 months or so out of each year, we're going to be spending in habitats, either in at the Arctic, Antarctic, or in the desert, in habitats to simulate some of the kind of difficulties that we would have on Mars. So it's going to be a lot of training. And they're not picking, jet jocks and fighter pilots. They're looking for just people that can form relationships and maintain relationships. And in reality, picking the crew is what they're going to call the most key and important part of it, is people that can, because we're going to be cooped up together. Four people in a very small, confined area for a fairly long period of time. And we sure don't want anybody to go postal. So it's going to be psychologically, they're going to really do a lot of evaluation, a lot of physical exams and tests to be sure that we're the right ones for it.
Are they going to encourage, are they going to want the babies to be born on Mars?
Interesting enough, there's a very good study that was done, and they've done it with mice and other primates. Conception in zero gravity or microgravity is very difficult, and even not dangerous, but fertilization doesn't want to take place, and the cellular division doesn't take place properly without the kind of little bit of gravity. Now, on Mars itself, the research paper I read says they don't seem to have too much concern about it, and of course, then we would be looking forward to probably the first Martian born on Mars. So humans are going to be humans, and we're going to, their sex is going to be sex. We have to be honest about that.
We go now to Tyler in Hooksett, New Hampshire. Good morning, Tyler. Go ahead.
Hi. I have two questions. What are you going to do for a source for power? I've heard nothing about that, or communications. How are you going to communicate back and forth, or if you're going to at all, between you guys there on Mars and Earth? And my second question is, what are you going to do if you run into some other beings? If they exist there. I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure thing.
Okay. Now, was the first part of that question having to do with power?
Yeah, the propulsion system.
Okay. Part of what's going to be sent up with the heavy lift rockets and that the rover is going to be putting in place will be photovoltaic cells. And so we'll be using primarily solar power. The problem about going with a nuclear power plant, we want to keep nukes off of Mars. And
you do.
The plan is to work it with solar power. And then as we actually have generators and we can have with water, we can break it down through electrolysis and have our hydrogen and our oxygen separate. And so we'll be able to produce our own fuel. So there's a lot of things can happen there. Now, the second part of her question, would you refresh me?
The second part of the question, of course, is communication. How are you going to, text message back and forth? And
we have the Mars Global Surveyor orbitals, and we have several other communication satellites that are already in place. But the Mars One, from what I've read, will be having our own. In addition, there'll be another satellite that'll be positioned in the same orbit that the Earth, but like 66 days behind the Earth, so that when Mars is on the backside of the Sun with respect to Earth, we'll be able to get our signals around. So there will only be about a matter of about an hour or two or something once every 2 years where we would have difficulty in communicating with the Earth. But there'll be open communications, and we'll be able to send text messages to our favorites.
Well, I guess you might be able to Skype too, right?
Who knows? We may come up with some even better ideas than that one.
Skype, by the way, says they're working on 3D Skype now.
How about that? 3D printers and 3D Skype.
Yep. It's going to be like people are right there in your room. It's just
that would be good.
Strange technology going faster and faster. These pods that you'll be living in, how big are they?
Each one of the members of the four crew, as I read, we would have 50 cubic meters of space individually. That's fairly good.
50 cubic meters.
I'm not that at, without mathematically getting calculators out, but I think it's someplace between about 10 by 20 feet, something like that.
Well, let's see. It's got to be at least 8 to 10 feet tall, right?
Yep. It's about 6.5 feet tall and 10 feet wide and 20 feet long. So that's, but then all of them are all interconnected, so you can go from one to the others without having to be put on a suit or anything like that. And then you're going to have the greenhouses and a lot of room and space in there. So as we develop the first landing site and the colony there, it will grow and the space will grow, and it'll be much more congenial to have some room to move around in.
I guess they'll be designed here to kind of, almost like a Lego set to kind of fit together once you're on Mars, huh?
That kind of looks like that. There are passageways that goes between the different pods, and then you have the inflatables that inflate out to give work areas, rooms, research rooms, greenhouses, et cetera. So, and that's the other thing is that most of it will end up being covered with at least 2 feet of Martian soil for protection against the radiation.
And do you think you'll have like a kitchen pod, a bedroom pod, and things like that?
Yes, they will. That's all pre-designed here on Earth.
Let's go to Tim in Racine, Wisconsin, Wildcard Line. Hey, Tim, go ahead.
Hey, how are you doing? You kind of were touching on what I'm going to ask, but you didn't. I mean, I'm going to get to a different side of it. Now, you said you could communicate and everything else, but what would happen if, like, say, something happens on Earth, like a nuclear war, and everything gets wiped out? Then what are you going to do? You can't get back. You can't talk to nobody. You're just there. You can't get no supplies. No one else is going to come out. I don't mean to be a downer about anything, but I mean, I'm just kind of curious. What would you do? Now, well, take my answer up there and love the show.
Alrighty.
I would be thankful.
Thanks,
I wasn't on Earth when it happened. Be glad that I was on my own colony there. And it would give us a little bit more incentive to be sure we keep it going and getting it going good.
I was going to write a book once, Ken, of astronauts that were sent to the Mars or the moon, and upon their return, before they could even get back, they're watching the planet, and it blows up, an asteroid hits it.
Hits the Earth?
Yeah, hits the planet, and they can't get back.
Yep. Well, there are time and happenstance and things that can happen in the universe that we have no control over. So what we do is we just pick what we can do best and do the best at it. So I'm looking forward to that.
Let's go to Jack in Abilene, Kansas. Hello, Jack. It's your turn.
Hey, George.
Welcome.
Really curious to know what you're going to have on or who you're going to have on in September still. But I kind of wanted to reflect on your last couple of callers. I think they brought out some really good points. And, you know, your caller or your guest on doesn't – he said he doesn't know as much as, say, the guy that called in. And I've kind of forgotten what I was going to say about the second caller. But, you know, if they're really going to do it and...
Well, they're going to do it. It's going to happen eventually.
They canceled the flight around or something like that. And then your caller said, you know, what about if there's a nuclear strike? But, I mean, what if... I mean, is anybody really taking accountability? You know, is a dollar going to collapse? I mean, Art Bell was saying something about that he finds it funny that you were
Jack, I have no idea what you're talking about at this point. But what happens if there's a collapse on the planet, Ken?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
What happens if there's a collapse on the Earth? As I said, it's going to give a greater incentive for us to be able to continue to be self-sufficient with our greenhouses and growing our own food. That's part of the training. And the person brought up not knowing what all is going on. That's what I was alluding to earlier, is that, you know, we can take ordinary people that, you know, reasonably high intelligence, and during the 7 years, they'll be trained and cross-trained so that on each crew of each team of four, there's going to be at least two people that are skilled in either the medical side, first aid, or in communications, or in electronics, or in agricultural and horticulture. So the first crew's up there, we're going to have it all covered. And if one person is incapacitated or ill, we still have someone that is skilled in that area. So as the other crews start showing up every 2 years, it becomes less stressful because we have more backups and more people trained. So the training is going to be very paramount. And even during the 6 months while we're going to Mars, we'll be still under training.
At what point do you think they will say, enough is enough, we can't send any more people? I mean, how many people do you think they'll send up there?
Well, we're talking about 24. We know of that. And a lot of it has to do with just how popular this reality program comes and how many other people would like to go. I see that after the, because you've had over right at 200,000 people have said, hey, I'm willing to go. Of those, hey, if we have just 10% that are really good, highly qualified, then as we move on down the line and we get those six crews on Mars, we'll have probably already picked other teams and getting them trained ready to go. So I see this as a continuing process as we make Mars more habitable.
Well, I think so too. This is exciting though, isn't it?
It is extremely exciting to me. It's been a dream ever since Buck Rogers and Flash Gordon when I was a little kid. It was always Mars for me.
The selection process for the astronauts.
Yes.
That fascinates me too, the way that they're going to go through and select people. And I guess you guys got to go through psychological tests, don't you?
That's a very major part of it. And I don't know if you saw my video. That's one of the things I just went through. Complete psychological and physiological examinations for the college I had to go through for the Civil Air Patrol. But this is one of the things. That's why I'm so anxious about this August 31st, is that this voting, you know, it's not exactly what you'd say we're looking for the most qualified, but if you don't have the points and high enough points of people checking in and looking at your listening to your video and saying they like you and giving you five stars, you may not even wind up getting looked at by the selection committee. So I want my friends on coast to coast to be going on and voting for me.
Well, that's how do they vote for you? Go to the Mars website.
Just go to www.mars-1. .com, and that'll go to the main one, and you scroll down to the bottom of that page, and it says View Applications. You click on that, takes you over to the applications, and on the right side, you can select what country and sex and what have you. But all they have to do on me is just go down to age and click 70 and hit apply the filter, and it'll take them right to where there's not very many of us at my age that are in the kind of health and condition that would be willing to make this kind of a trip. So there's only about five or six, but you'll see, and it says Ralph. My birth certificate says Ralph, so that's what they put on the picture with me, is Ralph wants to go to Mars. And but anyway, they listen to the video and click on that, and you can do it daily if you want to.
All right, my friend, stay with us, Ken. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about your trip to Mars. Next hour, Adam Hall joins us as we talk about the Earth Keeper, a fascinating story of trying to preserve the planet in a very unique way. We're going to come back in a moment with Ken Johnson and talk more about what he wants to do, and that's go to Mars. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Ken Johnson, with us. Ken, also, what have you been working on beyond this project, of course?
What have I been working on?
Yeah.
Well, with the Civil Air Patrol being the group commander for ADON, I have 17 schools that have the aerospace education program being taught by teachers to our youth and the leadership. And it's one of the best programs in the world because these kids that don't have the opportunity to get good discipline and good training and good education, and we provide that. In addition, when we have the squadrons where we have the meetings either during the school or afterwards for the squadrons, and they actually wind up wearing the Air Force uniforms and developing color guards and drill teams and going on search and rescue programs. The Civil Air Patrol does 95% of all the search and rescue cases that come up in the United States. So it's been around since officially was formed December the 1st, 1941, 6 days before Pearl Harbor. We've got a fantastic history.
What kind of planes do you use with the Civil Air Patrol?
What kind of airplanes? We use Cessna 182s.
And who maintains them, Ken?
We do. Well, the Civil Air Patrol does the regular maintenance, but then when you have to have your majors, then we have a contract with other companies, and then they take care of the maintenance, the detail maintenance on the aircraft.
All right, let's go to Greg in Jacksonville, Florida. Greg, welcome to the program.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, world. Hey, humans being humans, how will you folks deal with crime and punishment? You know, rape, murder, stuff like that. Or will you be taking any weapons into space? Because you can't count out the Chinese. You know, they'll put up a killer rover or something like that. You know, stuff like that. How do you defend yourself?
Who's going to school the place, Ken?
That's interesting. Now, we've been doing a lot of talking, some of my friends and all, about that. I would imagine that the original colony is going to be rather socialistic, and where we all are going to be depending upon each other. And we will wind up having to make our own laws and our own government. And hopefully we can take and learn something from the mistakes that have been made here on Earth and make it a little bit better.
Cheryl is in Palm Coast, Florida, east of the Rockies. Hey, Cheryl, are you going to go to Mars?
I don't know. I used to work for a company called Orbital Sciences Corporation in Dulles, Virginia. And the one thing they wanted to do was they wanted to get to Mars. And I remember they were working on a project called the Mars Observer. And years ago, I think it was the 1980s, they had a movie out with Rock Hudson. It was called The Martian Chronicles.
Yep.
Where people did go to Mars, and in the movie, there was, you know, they got a regular colony up there. But in the end, there was a nuclear war, and they couldn't get back. So, you know, it's, you know, in the way we're going today, I wonder. But I wonder, did you ever hear of that company called Orbital Sciences Corporation?
I think I've heard the name. I wasn't that heavily involved with NASA and what was going on at the time. But The Martian Chronicles, that was one of my favorite movies. And I kind of loved what it ended there at the end, where he went over to the edge of the canyon, and they were looking down into where there was water, and he was talking to his wife and two kids and says, "What do you see?" And he says, "We are the Martians." So that's the colony became totally independent, had to, by necessity.
If this works, Ken, this is going to be a huge booming moment for companies.
Yes, it will.
That are exploring and going into this field. Just huge. I mean, publicly held, it'll be the next Apple computer company, won't it?
Absolutely. And that's, as I said, that's part of what the beauty of by letting the civilian corporation get involved and being able to move man off of this planet and over to Mars, and then who knows where we go in the universe from there. But the companies, it's going to be huge as far as investments and advertisements, and not who's to say what we're going to discover mineral-wise on the planet. So, you know, there's can be a lot to look forward to. We just need to get there first and then make it happen.
Let's go to Joe in Seattle, Washington, first-time caller. Hi, Joe. Go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. Okay, I'm having a little bit of program overlap. What was it? In the last 4 or 5 days, we had the guy with the CIA project taking Barack Obama and blinking him off to Mars. And while that's it's past where I can stretch my brain, I don't discount it totally. What are you going to do if you get up there and there is underground colonies of Martians?
Sure.
And there's already, you know, remember that picture of the little baby shoe that's got sent
yep.
back?
Absolutely.
You know, what are you going to do?
Well, I hope I'm going to hold out the olive branch, and they're going to be advanced enough, or hopefully we're advanced enough to keep up with them, because I've seen some rather fascinating pictures from Mars that look like underground tube transportation systems. So, you know, we won't know until we get there, and that's part of what the psychological testing and everything is, to be sure that we don't have any hotheads. And the other guy, the gentleman that spoke earlier about weapons, I've often thought recently, because this has only been going on for 2 weeks in my life, to be honest with you, what would we do as far as weapons are concerned? Hopefully we wouldn't have to have any, but it's certainly something to think about.
Well, what if they say to you, go home?
I'd say, send the bus. I'm ready to go.
Let's go to Greg in Meadview, Arizona. Hi, Greg. Go ahead.
George, real quick, first of all, your bumper music, this evening. My wife and I are enjoying it extremely well. Good choice. Number one, how much does he think the first is going to cost, and how many trips is it going to take to get all this equipment there to get back?
They're not coming back, Greg. That's the thing. They're going to stay, but what about the initial costs again, Ken?
The initial cost has been calculated out at about $6 billion, and this would be able to get all the way up through the, I believe, the six crews of four each. And by then, we should have a pretty well-functioning colony on Mars, pretty well-established. And from there, it'll just grow on from there as more interest comes from both businesses, industry, and tourists. So we'll just have to take it one step at a time. First things we got to do is get there.
How many people do you think are going to do flybys, let's say, around the moon in terms of a tourist capacity? I think they'd be sold out.
I would certainly, if I could afford it, have applied to take a tour and trip around, because I'd like to take a look at some of those areas that I've seen the pictures of before and on the backside. But, no, there's going to be a lot of tourism eventually, and it should have already been here by now after we landed on the moon. We're talking 45 years ago. It's a shame, but we need to wake humanity up and take our rightful step forward in the cosmos.
Are you disappointed that NASA's not pushing this rather than these private companies?
After everything I've read and studied about the program for Mars One, I'm kind of glad that the government is not involved in it, because I think we can make our own contracts and make our own deals. I mean, we have two or three major corporations now that have very well-functioning rockets and that are... and particularly with SpaceX, and so that's just one step forward. Let's keep the government out of it and keep private enterprise in, because that's the system that made America great.
And how are they going to supply you? You think you're going to get some rockets popping in, dropping things down in your region?
Well, we will take enough with us for a significant period of time, except to we can get our own growing our own food on Mars. But then as I said, there are going to be six cargo flights before the first person gets there. Now, as we go along, there are going to be other things that we're going to be wanting, and depending on what we discover, we may wind up with being able to barter and trade with the planet Earth. You know, say we need certain things, and we've got this that you need. So we just have to take those one step at a time, but I'm very positive about the success of this operation.
Would you like to be considered as your own planet, of course, but your own country out there, as opposed to being part of the United States?
Well, that's interesting. At some point, we certainly will have to consider that, because we would be an independent organization of humans, and we're going to have some sort of recognition, so we may well be the colony of Mars, or maybe it's whatever major corporation will continue funding us. We may give them names of part of the territory, provided, as the other person said, it's not already owned by Martians.
You may be the 51st state. Who knows, right?
That's right.
Let's go to Jerry Carmichael, California. Jerry, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
No, it's great to talk to you, George. I was just wondering if there's some way we can include all these warring countries in the possibility of being a part of our future rather than a part of the demise of man here on Earth. Somehow interest them into I know that they aren't educated in that kind of thing right now, but they certainly could be. And if we could somehow get everybody on the same track going towards a new future together rather than tearing down the old future together, would that work?
Well, it's kind of like what was done with Australia back in the early days. That's where they sent their criminals and everything else. I would hope they wouldn't send them to my part of Mars, and maybe there's another planet or something we could... You know, pack all of those that
want to destroy everything, let them go there and work it out until they have to become as prosperous as like Australia. It's a fantastic country now.
In a perfect world, Ken, of course, it would all work out, but it's not a perfect world, and a lot of things will happen.
Right.
Greed, jealousy, you name it. You know, you're unfortunately going to bring the ills of Earth, I think, to Mars. You can't escape that.
It's bound to happen. That's with the initial cruise, you're going to have poets, philosophers, musicians that are also schooled and trained in the technologies that are needed to make the colony prosper. And I'm sure there are going to be some negative, not intelligent, but negative personalities that we'll have to deal with. And hopefully they can be dealt with in a very positive manner there.
We go next to Houston, Texas. Dave's with us. Hey, David, thanks for calling.
Hey, George. Hey, my question for you is, okay, so you're talking about how you had pictures on the moon of, like, structures and stuff.
Yeah.
I was wondering, could that possibly be, like, maybe when the Nazis, during the after World War II, they escaped there, or, like, something, the Mayans?
Probably a good theory, David, just about anything. You know, nobody knows really where did all these Nazis go, what kind of technology they had. I would have to think that these are either structures from ETs, if they're there, or some high past civilization on this planet.
I agree with you.
Dramatic story out there. Truly dramatic. Why don't we go back to the moon, Ken? Why are we worried about Mars?
So you're talking about just why don't we just focus on the moon?
Yeah.
Well, some people say, well, we've already been there. But then again, there's still a lot of minerals and things that can be devised, as well as science studies that can be done in very low gravity, 1/6 as opposed to 1/3 on Mars. And I would think that we should be doing both. The moon is a whole lot easier to get to. We've already proved that. Mars, once we've made our first trip there, it's going to be the biggest event in humankind's history, of recorded history, that we're aware of. So I see them both happening at the same time.
Kevin is with us now in Connecticut. Hey, Kevin, go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm picturing the look on George's face that night that he gets to do his first interview with someone on Mars.
Oh, my gosh. You got that right, Kev.
We would have to choreograph the and splice it together so it sounded like that we were carrying on a conversation instead of
there'll be a lag.
20-minute delay, yeah.
Maybe all that stuff will be worked out by then. My question for you, Ken, have you read anything? Are there any conversations or plans at this point to bring any animals to Mars for any reason, either for food or even companionship, dogs and kitty cats, maybe?
You know,
here we go.
I had thought about that until I was reading this particular book. There's a fascinating book out there which almost perfectly makes me wonder where Mars One got all of their plans. But the name of it is The One-Way Mission to Mars, the Colonizing the Red Planet. And in it talked about pets and the fact that your pets are such tremendous breeding grounds for all kinds of microbes and things that it would not be very healthy and safe for us to do it. Because originally I was thinking, well, it'd be nice to sneak a little pet along and take your puppy with you. But I think for quite some time that won't be able to be done.
No, probably not. Jeff is with us in Hutchinson, Kansas. Hi, Jeff. Thank you.
Good evening, gentlemen. I had an interesting dinner with about another 150 people Saturday night with Buzz Aldrin, Hayes, Walt Cunningham, and several other astronauts.
Buzz is one of a kind, isn't he?
At the Kansas Cosmosphere, yeah, Buzz has this new book out about Mars and going there and his thoughts. But my question to Ken was, you touched on it before, but how do you, I'm going to use the word defeat, the human condition, the jealousy, the falling in love, the things like that creep into our psyche and make things go wrong.
He's got a good point, Ken. That is absolutely going to be a major problem.
And the psychiatrist, the training that we're going to have, and part of the crew members will be well-trained in psychology and able to be to deal with those when we see that they're starting to rear their ugly heads. It's something certainly we have to be aware of and to do our best to avoid. Back when I was in flight training in the Marine Corps and Navy at Pensacola, we were out in survival training, and we'd just been dropped off like we just, you know, parachuted into the jungle. And some of the biggest guys, the most strong ones of the bunch, curled up in the prenatal position and stayed there for 3 days, no drink, no water, no food. And so they came by to pick us up, and we were out, you know, foraging, finding food, and having a good time. But you're going to have people that are going to do strange things, and part of it is the training we will receive. We'll be able to deal with it probably in a very good manner. And I'm not looking forward to having to deal with people that go wacky and curl up and don't want to deal with it. But then you're going to have to. It probably will happen.
I don't even know how the astronauts aboard the International Space Station can do what they do. I mean, I'd go bonkers after a while.
Well, that was it. You know, we have had problems with relationships with astronauts. In fact, as you recall, there was this one female astronaut that got very jealous of another astronaut that was having a relationship with a commander, and she drove all the way from Houston to Florida. She was going to kidnap her and murder her.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
So, and anytime you're dealing with the human species, you're going to be dealing with problems of jealousy. It's part of, unfortunately, part of our makeup. But we can do our best to try to train and condition ourselves to be aware that these things are maybe affecting us, and other people can then work with us to help you get through those kind of emotional traumas.
A one-way trip, Ken Johnson. I hope to talk to you before you go to Mars, huh?
I'm looking forward to it, and I'm hoping that everybody's going to go and vote for me, and I do have a chance because I think I'm probably one of the best qualified persons there. I've already had all the training mostly.
And you want to go?
Absolutely.
All right, Ken, good luck to you. We're going to monitor you and see where you're going. And, of course, the website, if you want to vote for Ken Johnston, it's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Back with more in just a moment.